Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, welcome to Bridge the Atlantic. We're your host, Marciano Valli.
I'm Ross Barber.
Today on the show, we have Dan Fila, the drummer of metal band Vargo, with us. Hi, Dan.
Hello. What's happening?
Not too much. How about yourself, man?
Just enjoying the last days of summer.
So, Dan, we want to know right off the bat, three things about yourself that everyone should know.
Well, this was in the preview question that you sent me, right?
Maybe. What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. Planned at all.
obviously, I'm a lover of music. Music is something that's taken me to incredible places, and I've met incredible people. And I mean, you and I met through music, me playing on your records. And
that's right.
I mean, that's a pretty obvious one. I love my wife. I love my daughter. I love my dog. And I'm afraid of snakes.
How's that? Okay, I got to ask. How did this fear of snakes happen? How did this
I have no idea, but I'm horrified of them. We're up north this weekend, and there's a bunch of people there. And the kids caught a water snake, and they're like, "Oh, Uncle Dan, look at the water snake." And I just turned, like, I almost passed out, and I'm like, "Please keep it away from me. Please keep it away." And then Linda's mom had to come out and say, "Oh, I'd keep the snake away from Dan. He doesn't like the snakes." Yeah.
It was your most macho moment then, right?
Yeah. Well, you and I both know I'm not a macho guy.
No, so. You and I both, brother. Dan played on my record. My last couple of records, and the last time we were doing that, your daughter came out, and I remember her running throughout the entire studio.
Yeah, does that.
Dan's like, "Can you go get her?" I'm like, "What do I do?"
Yeah,
so I'm running.
You grab her, you tie her down.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got to get a stun gun for that kid. Her and Linda get along really well. They're both girly girls, so they like to go shopping and makeup and all that stuff. The kind of stuff that you and I like to do together.
Yeah, I was going to say, right?
Yeah, same old.
Oh my gosh. How do you like being a dad?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It was obviously wasn't something I planned on.
Right.
But I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. She's forced me to grow up and to, be a contributing person, and
in some ways, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when she was born, it's like I had no choice. It's like I have to take care of this girl, and I wasn't going to be like my dad did and abandon me when we were 5 years old. So, I mean, you got to man up to that shit, which unfortunately some people still don't do. But yeah, it's good. It's all worked out, and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? And
that's right, man.
I'm definitely pretty strong.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that's something I can relate to myself with the father figure. And I always say that's something that I think helped push me into music. Would you say that's the same thing for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was being alone all the time. And I just, had a lot of time to think and to do things. And I think a lot of that, anger and wanting to get out of the situation I was in inspired me and pushed me to, get really good on my instrument and to learn more about it and, just wanting to get the hell out of that situation. And also, it taught me that, I'm not the most important thing in the world. When you have a kid, the world's not all about you.
Exactly.
which it was,
which
for
is
me
shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, it was shocking. It was like, holy crap, it's not all about me. But no, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, people need to take responsibility for their actions. And like, especially when it comes to kids. I mean, with my father, I didn't talk to him for 20 years. And because I couldn't understand why he would want to leave us. But then, you know, while we were in Europe, I was with Hypodust, with Juice in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I decided to go see my dad on a whim. Just like, well, you know what? I'm here already. I'm going to go pop in and see him. And I sort of saw him, mended bridges, and he died 4 months later. So it's the
That's
weirdest
crazy
thing.
How that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, there are things that, I don't know, I just had this feeling. It's like, dude, you got to go and just let all this, you know, hatred and stuff go. And I did, and that was, you know, that's what came out of it. But I mean, still, at the end of the day, it's like, it's hard to let go of something like that. And it's turned me into the person who I am, which is I never quit. And, you know, don't abandon your responsibilities.
Well, do you think it was having a child that made you want to seek out your father?
I don't know. That's a good question that I'll ask my therapist next time I go see her.
You and me both, brother.
Oh, yeah. We have great conversations.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So tell me about your father, Dad. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of, you know, having grown up without a father and getting into music, you said that it was a way for you to channel your frustration and your anger, right?
Yeah.
Is that probably why you chose drums as your primary instrument?
I was just always attracted to drums. just like I used to set up pots and pans and Kentucky Fried Chicken barrels before I knew what, you know, was really in going into KFC, the dirtiest of all the dirty birds.
Oh yeah.
But just used to bang around on stuff. And I met Joe Varga when I was in grade two.
Oh wow.
And he introduced me to Kiss. And Kiss Alive 1, and then in grade 4, Kiss Alive 2 came out, and by then I was hooked. And I bugged my mom until I was in grade 7, and then I finally got a little $50 drum kit. And then it's weird, because I knew Joe when we were in grade 2, and then he moved away to Stony Creek, which is the east end of the city. And then me and my mom moved into the apartment building right next door to his.
No way.
So yeah, so it's like, hey, Dan, how's it going? So by that point, he'd been playing bass, and we got into, you know, Rush and Black Sabbath and, you know, Judas Priest. And then we got full on into the, you know, British invasion of metal and, you know, Saxon and all that stuff. And then in 79, Van Halen 1 came out and Kill 'Em All came out by Metallica. And I mean, that pretty much laid the groundwork for my musical tastes.
Right.
And yeah.
Well, what brought you guys to form Varga? What were the circumstances besides the fact that you guys knew each other since the second grade and you lived next to each other?
It was a very easy thing. I mean, there's some things in life that you have to force to make work. And with Joe, it's just like, yeah, well, let's get together and jam. And the hardest thing for me, Joe and myself, were to find other people to play with who are equally as committed.
Right.
And then when we were in grade 9, we met Adam. And Adam, Joe and I played in a band called, it was some stupid Screamer Patrol or some stupid name like that. Some typical heavy metal name. And we met Adam. We were playing at a talent show. And then Adam and Joe hit it off. And then the next thing we knew, we were in a band. Adam joined our band. And we went through a series of guitar players. And then in 1989, Sean was the last person that we got to join the band. And that was it. A year later, we were signed. And we did our thing for almost 10 years. And we got to do a lot of crazy, crazy stuff. I mean, we opened up for Metallica. We played White Zombie, Prong. Rob Halford from Judas Priest came out to see us play.
That's crazy.
Dimebag Darrell and Vinnie Paul came to see us play. And Phil Anselmo came to see us play. And it was ridiculous. The guys from Dream Theater.
Oh, my God.
You know, like if someone would have told me when I got serious about playing music, that we would be playing on the same stage as the biggest heavy metal band of all time, I probably would have told them a couple of words that are inappropriate for this show. But I mean, you know, it just goes to show that things like that happen. And, you know, I know for Joe, a big moment was when we were playing in Phoenix, Arizona, and Joe's singing, and he's a huge Rob Halford fan. And he looks and, you know, his idol is at the side of the stage watching play and sing. Just amazing stuff.
Well, speaking of, like, so you guys got signed, that was in 1991?
Yeah.
It was in 91 you guys got signed. It was the same year you released your debut album, right?
Yeah. Actually, Prototype came out in 93 or 94.
Okay.
But, I mean, we first started getting courted by Sony BMG in 91.
Okay, right.
And there's some good lessons to be learned in that. Maybe we can talk about that a bit later.
Right. Well, actually, you know, I wanted to ask you right now, you know, what were the deciding factors to sign to BMG back then?
Well, initially we signed with a label out of New York called Maze Records.
Okay.
Now, Maze had a band called Biohazard on the label. It was like an underground heavy label. And it was perfect for us. It's like we got this US deal and blah, blah, blah. So we went and recorded a full album for Maze. And then the guy went bankrupt and he couldn't pay for it. So here we are. We're stuck with this album full of material that we're ready to release. And then, you know, we're on the hook for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Right.
And then BMG came in and said, well, you know, we think you guys are an amazing band, but we, you know, would like you guys to modernize your sound. And there's compromise involved. But I think, you know, in retrospect, some of the things that came out of it were great. I think the exposure that we got and the experience in the studio that we got, I mean, I wouldn't have known anything what I do now if it weren't for that experience. The negative experience was having to compromise your art for financial gains. All of a sudden, you know, we need to rely on the record label to pay our rent and to pay our tour support so we can go out there and get playing. Mm-hmm. And when you're sitting at a business table, business meeting, and, you know, the VP of marketing says, well, you guys are $700,000 unrecouped. Do you know what the interest is on $700,000?
Oh, and I'm just, God.
So it was brutal. But I mean, you know, everything has its price and it served its purpose. I mean, we, for, you know, good part of a decade, we're, you know, the biggest metal band out of Canada.
That's crazy.
And I mean, that's a, you know, pretty good thing to say. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's that. I think we paved the way for a lot of heavy metal bands these days. Most of them don't want to give us any credit, but when we started, it's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the funny thing is you and I personally know these people as well. So yeah. We're, you know, but I mean, it's just that everyone thinks that they invented everything. And there's always, you know, we don't claim to be the founders of what we did, but I mean, we're influenced by a band called Anvil from Toronto, who's a, you know, total pioneering metal band. Rush is a heavy metal band. If you strip them down, I mean, 2112 is a total metal album, progressive metal. So yeah, I mean, it was a double-edged sword, and it's just, I remember when we got finished recording Prototype, I couldn't go near the drums for a month. I was so shell-shocked from the studio, and just, it's nothing like working with Julius or Juice Buddy. I mean, he knows how to approach and work with an artist's psyche. Whereas when you have someone that works for a major label who's producing your band, all that matters is money. And it's when money and art start going hand in hand, your product is going to be severely compromised. And that's what happened with us. And with the new records, I mean, that there's no compromise there at all. So, you know, the money that's involved, you know, we paid for it ourselves, and, you know, we managed to convince Juice to do the records. And, you know, subsequently the stuff that's come out of it is people are going, holy crap, these albums are great. And where have you guys been? Yeah, and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, we weren't a grunge band and we weren't going to try to pretend to be that. So when that whole movement took over, instead of conforming to that, we said, you know what, let's just see what happens, and see what happens turns into 10 years. And I mean, in the meantime, I, you know, played on your records and I learned a lot more about music. I went and I got a music degree and I became a high school teacher. And I mean, music is something that none of us have ever stopped doing. And then this time around, when we all got back in the room and plugged in, there wasn't any, it felt like we never stopped. And the only thing that changed is we were all better on our instruments and we all had much more respect for music in general and for each other. And we weren't completely drunk and stoned, which is a good thing. I mean, at there was a point in my life where I couldn't function without being like that. And I mean, that's a dark place to go, but you know, being clean and sober, that there's nothing like that feeling of, you know, playing music and connecting with everyone. And you know, that's how it is. It's like a long lost reunion of friends, and you know, we can remember. We're going to remember it this time around.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
would you say, knowing what you know now from being signed to a major label, if you were offered that chance again now, knowing what you know, do you think that you would do the same thing, or do you think that you would go independent and do it yourself?
The playing field has completely changed. I mean, now with the internet and social media, everyone has an equal sort of way to get exposed.
Yeah.
Major labels right now, as far as I can see, are distributors for people like Miley Cyrus and Walk Off the Earth and, you know, those type of mainstream popular bands. Would we sign the type of deal that we did 20 years ago? Absolutely not. That was almost a detriment of our band. And I mean, it caused a lot of damage. Again, it caused a lot of good.
But I think these days, and you know, Marcio, you're one of the people who opened up my eyes to the social media world. When I was working with you, you're showing me all these things. And that's the key, is you need to have that savvy. And you can do it. And you know, a record deal is like getting a mortgage for your house.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, you know, going and sitting with the banker and they're looking up at your credit rating. Oh, you got a ding here because you didn't pay $25 on your phone bill. I mean, that's what the studio was like, because they got this little microscope on you and they're like analyzing everything, and they analyze how you look. And it's, you know, if you're good, in time, your stuff will... it will get discovered, and I firmly believe that.
You know, the difference that you can hear in the latest, you know, Return of the Metal and Enter the Metal, is that we're passionate and we're having fun, and you can hear that in the record. Mm-hmm. And you can hear like the free spiritedness of it, and it's like, you know what, we really don't give a shit if anybody likes this, because we didn't. We never released it for mass consumption. What's been happening along the way is people have been picking it up and going, wow, this is really, really good. What the hell?
And that's probably because it's more genuine and it's more what you want to create. So people are latching onto that. And I think that's kind of where things have gone wrong a little bit with the mainstream side of things, is the authenticity is not there so much now. Mm-hmm. or when it is there, it's diluted down. And yeah, it's just all about money, you know,
It is. And when I hear that in metal, it breaks my heart. There's this whole genre of metal coming out that I like to call Pro Tools metal. and that's where a band will go in the studio, or one or two people from the band, they'll record a guitar riff. They'll loop that riff 1,000 times. They'll speed it up. They'll quantize it. They'll just like manipulate something. And When they put it together in a song, I mean, there's like one or two parts of the song that sound good, but it doesn't have the cohesiveness. And I mean, with Varga, we hone each section. The transitions from one part into the other are seamless. And, you know, like the new stuff I'm hearing, it's like, I'll edit here, bam, and you can hear the distinct edits between the sections, and it has no soul. And,
there's a record that one of my friends worked on, and they took all the original drum tracks and got rid of them and just used samples on that.
Oh, God.
And just like, that's the mentality of metal bands these days. And everyone just,
you know, it resorts to the low B strings. Like, oh, we got to go to this really low part, and oh, here's the breakdown, and here's like, it's so cliche. And that's what happened with metal in the late 80s. And it's, people don't see it. And, it, you know, metal is more of a community where people help each other out and they support each other. And that's, you know, in the mid 80s when we had, you know, Metallica huge, Anthrax huge, Slayer, Megadeth, when we had, you know, that really big upsurging of metal, that's because all those bands worked together and they would go on tour together. And metal bands, again, to their detriment, I mean, no one wants to help each other out. We have this a bunch of wicked metal bands up here in Canada. They're all so afraid to share their audiences because they think they're going to get their audiences stolen. That really what they're doing is they're just killing their own scene, or, you know, decreasing their longevity.
We see that quite a lot here as well.
Well, it's too bad. You look at what happened in Seattle in the late 80s, early 80s and 90s. Why did that scene take off? Well, it took off because one of the bands became huge, big brothered another band, they would get huge, and so on and so on. All, you know, next thing you know, you have a huge music scene. And it just kills me that people are so stupid that they can't see that. It's like, man, there's room for everyone.
Well, it's the funny thing is, as a fan of music, I actually, there's a camaraderie, and there's like, I get excited when bands are friends with one another. And if I like those bands, I'm like, oh, cool, they're friends too. I don't know what it is about that, but it's
you get
exciting.
A weird feeling, and it's nice. Yeah. And I wrote a blog post a few weeks ago about community versus competition, or was it collaboration versus competition? I think it was. Talking about, you know, instead of seeing each other as competition, see each other as, you know, opportunities to, you know, share an audience and help each other out. And I think that is definitely something that's missing. I don't know if it's so much just now, or if it was then, or if it's, but it's definitely something I'm noticing now.
It's a constant thing. And I mean, if anything, I like to look back at history and learn from it. It's like, you know, if I fall on my face and I smash my teeth in the sidewalk, well, I'm going to make sure that I don't trip over that same piece of pavement and do that again. I mean, and people are just making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah. So actually what I wanted to just touch on is how you guys even got hooked up playing with White Zombie and Metallica, because those were the two of the biggest metal bands in the world at the time.
Yeah.
Right. So how'd you guys hook that up?
Well, we're signed to a major label. And remember how I said all the negative things about being signed to a major label? The positive things are is that they have a lot of power. And then back in the 90s, record companies dictated what people listen to. You know, we got on Beavis and Butthead and those things. I would like to think that our music had a part of it, but
I
think for the most part, it was political. to get onto a tour like that now, you have to buy onto tours. It's funny. It's like the circle has gone completely like 360. It's wild.
I've heard about that. Well, I was going to ask you about Beavis and Butthead. That must have been, what was that like when that whole thing happened?
It was funny as hell. Because of two cartoon characters, our fan base increased tenfold.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. It was really incredible to see that.
Well, those two animated characters really could have made or break a band.
They broke a band called Winger.
Yeah.
If you notice, the one kid that is at the brunt of all their jokes is wearing a Winger shirt. Winger was this in a genre I like to call cock rock back in the day. And they're writing, you know, inappropriate songs about, you know, 17-year-old girls and just stupid stuff like that. And I remember watching an interview on MTV with Kipnir going, you know, I don't know why these cartoon characters destroyed my band. And I'm thinking, well, your crappy music destroyed your band. But, you know, they just helped. Anyway.
Well, you say it the way it is, man. That's what I love about you.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. Too old for that shit.
Well, okay. I was also going to ask you, so like, what caused you guys to kind of part ways? I know you guys stayed friends. You guys have always been friends, but part ways in the sense of making music for, you know, the better half of a couple decades, pretty much.
As I said before, the major labels controlled what everyone was listening to, and they wanted to put us into that box. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can wrap it up anyway, but, you know, if if it looks like metal, it smells like metal, it's metal, no matter what. You can put all the plaid clothing you want on it. And you know, we don't know how to play anything else together. I mean, in other situations, I mean...
Well, come on, you play it on my records.
Pop. Yeah, but I mean, when I play on your records, I'm still playing aggressively. And,
yeah.
You know, but I know you, and, you know, I obviously have, you know, personal connection with you. I was at your friggin' wedding, obviously. So, you know, we're friends, and I can feed off that. But I mean, you know, people ask me why I've never been a studio drummer. And the reason is because, I mean, I can't pretend to play on someone's stuff who I don't like as a person. And that's, you know, and as a band with Varga, you know, when we're together in a room and it feels right, it's special. But, you know, when we had all the sort of influence from the labels trying to get us to sound like a grunge band, well, it ruined what it was. And yeah,
for sure.
And again, I think the best thing to happen to music was the internet. And I think the worst thing to happen to music was the internet, for reasons why I said before, because now, you know, just so much crap is coming out. And, you know, I think bands should be practicing more and honing their songs and not trying to pretend to be rock stars.
Well, especially auto-tune. I mean, like, you know what? Oh. Like, talking about Pro Tools and everything, quantizing everything, I feel like it does have its place maybe in certain genres. Or
absolutely.
Whatever. But the genres where I feel like the whole essence of it is truth and honesty and a rebellion against the mainstream, like metal and punk and even grunge.
Yeah.
But that all kind of came from, I think, similar places, to just give something new, give something real. You know, those are just... When you have a metal singer, you're using auto-tune.
That's bad.
Shake my head. Yeah. You know what it is like. When I hear a pop star like Miley Cyrus or something using auto-tune, I shrug it off because you don't expect much from them. That's what it is.
No,
this other pop star is using it. Yeah, that's what they do. Lacking talent or whatever. I'm gonna get some flack for that for some people maybe, but it's my opinion. I don't care. I don't care if someone's perfectly in tune. I'd rather a truthful performance. And this doesn't just go for a vocal. This goes for a drummer like yourself or anyone. I'd rather a truthful, honest performance coming from someone that's from their heart than something that, you know, that's just looped. And I don't know, that's just me.
I agree. And getting back to the grunge thing, you have all these bands just completely trying to copy Nirvana. And, you know, Nirvana was special because they're Nirvana. There are those three guys in a room together and, you know, the shit came out and it was special.
Well, the fact that after Nirvana, Dave Grohl came out and didn't try to be Nirvana.
Yeah.
Should have been an example to all the other bands.
I know. But like Nirvana was an organic thing that happened. Yeah. And that's what people fail to see, to realize. Like, you can't copy that.
Where I first met you was back in, I think, 2007. 2007, 2008, when I was working on the Break Me EP with Julia's buddy, which we mentioned earlier, Julia's buddy, producer of all of the Alexa on Fire albums and the first City and Color record, amazing producer, Protest to Hero and everything. During your hiatus after Varga, you guys formed the band Hypodust.
Yeah, I think it was around 2003.
Did you and Julius know each other way before then? Or
I've known Juice for a long time. He was originally a drummer. And
that's right.
Our bands played together. And I remember we were doing some Iron Maiden songs. And I played the song that Julius was trying to learn on the drums and he couldn't figure it out. And then I think shortly after that, he stopped playing drums.
That's good. But he's got some pipes, man. That guy can sing.
He's
a phenomenal singer.
He's a phenomenal person.
Yeah.
A phenomenal artist, a phenomenal friend. I love the guy. We both do.
You guys decided to bring, well, it's not even really a decision. It seemed like it was a natural progression to bring Julius into the studio with you guys to record your two albums. Mm-hmm. Why did you guys decide to release two albums?
Because I couldn't stand listening to the entire 90 minutes of music that we put when we recorded it. It made me tired. And I couldn't concentrate on it, and I couldn't see people, you know, consuming the whole thing. And I also was getting that feeling about, you know, internet longevity. It's like, you know, you put something online and it's gone in a day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how could we extend extend, you know, the material that we had, because it wouldn't fit onto one CD. That was our first clue right there. It's like, okay, well, it's too long. So what do we do? And we're mastering it with Joa Carvalho, which you know very well.
Oh, yeah, and Brett.
Yeah, he's a great, amazing talent. Anyway, and he said, well, if you want, I could squeeze it onto one CD, but, you know, I agree with what you guys are doing. Put it out on two CDs.
I think it's genius.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons. Like you said, first of all, I think having two 30 to 40 minute CDs that a bit more people, especially with what you guys are doing, you know, 8 minute songs,
yeah,
you know, epics, and you guys have, it's very technical and everything, and I love it. But having mm-hmm. that break, I think, gives you more appreciation for it. It's like if they did all the Harry Potter movies at once.
Yeah, exactly. That's
what it's like.
It is like that.
Was part one and part two, right?
Yeah, it just seemed like a really natural thing. And again, it just worked out that way. And, you know, everything aligned perfectly. And I mean, it ended up costing us more money to put it out, you know, on two CDs because of product. But you know what? Yeah. At this point in the game, it's like, we just want to have something that we could be proud of.
Yeah.
And another thing that we've always wanted to do is to put out a double album, like double vinyl.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing that with Enter and Return of the Metal.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so we're going to be putting that together. Man. Again, just like total stupid kid stuff that we're doing for ourselves.
Of course. But you know what? I think that's where it has to come from. And I honestly think people pick up on that. Because I always say, you know, the audiences, particularly the audiences of independent music, mm-hmm. are not stupid.
No.
They're not stupid. You know, it's... It's. I feel like it's a little bit different than the mainstream, the indie versus mainstream, right?
Absolutely.
They are listening. They're looking for something different, and they get. I don't want to say real or fake. I just want to say honesty. They get.
There's more of a connection as well, because you're not like up on that pedestal, you know, like a mainstream artist. So you're generally you're a bit more accessible to them, and they feel a little bit more like they're part of your journey and they're part of what you're producing.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think the bond between like the independent musician and the independent musician's audience is like amazing. Like, there's something really, really special about it.
It's amazing. I mean, we have people who are like doing things for us. Like, it's incredible. We have just the dedication of the people, and it's interesting to see it snowball. You know yourself, Marcio, you can't ever give up. Mm-mm. You just got to keep at it, and you're gonna in this business you get shit on a lot, and you know you're gonna have 1,000 people to tell you no before one person tells you yes.
Always say that, man. That one person is all you gotta focus on.
That's it, one person,
you know? Or that and one good thing, you know,
that's it. And you know, don't rely on music to make your money. That's the biggest thing that people, biggest mistake they do. It's art. You know, this is something that you do for the passion of it. And, you know, having been on both sides of it, I can tell you that, you know, making music for the sake of making music that you love is what it's all about. I mean, there's no financial thing that could ever exceed what we've done, you know, playing in a room together with our best friend producing our records. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, we talked about technology. Did we use Pro Tools and some quantizing? Absolutely. We use technology as a tool, but not as a crutch.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like using it to, what would be the word? I want to say enhance.
Yeah.
That's maybe not quite the word, but
yeah.
You know, rather than, it's not a substitute. It's not a substitute for the talent. It's just, yeah, like you said, it's one of the tools in your toolbox that you use to make things sound as good as they can.
Exactly,
so
man.
That's different to, you know, yeah, as you said, a crutch.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the whole deal.
And I think there's no problem with that at all. Because, you know, I think when you're buying music, you want it to sound as good as it possibly can.
Right.
But at the same time, you've got to have the balance. You can't strip away what's real and what actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, so it's finding that balance. And yeah, that's the thing I think a lot of people struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you come see Varga live, when we're in Europe next summer, and I hook you up to come hang out with us, Ross.
That'd be amazing.
Do that.
And Marcio's going to be coming, but he just doesn't know it yet. No, actually, when we eventually do get over there and you see the band play, we sound like the record. And the reason for that is because we actually played those songs together and we honed those songs as a band.
I know, it's almost a foreign concept.
But what do you mean you played on the record? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, there you go. We had all those songs click tracked, so all those songs have a click track map. And there's, you know, several different tempos and time signatures in every song, and that took us a month to do that.
Wow.
So by the time we were done the click tracks, we all knew the songs really well. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a matter of, you know, the way that we rehearsed the songs. We rehearsed them first in a live situation and then in a studio, in Joe's studio, where we all had headphones and the click track on. And it was just basically, you know, we deadened all the drums and got rid of all the cymbals so we could hear everything perfectly. So there were no questioning, oh, you're playing an E flat there. Well, that really should be a C sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, we got rid of all that stuff before we got into the studio. And then, you know, when you give something that's good to someone like Juice Buddy, well, that's when it turns into something special.
What was touring like back then?
Let's put it this way. Within a year, we went from touring in the back of a bread truck that we bought to being in the back of a 52-foot tour bus.
Oh, my God.
So it was all came really hard and fast, and then it ended just as hard as fast. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I can describe it. it was great. It was some of the best times and some of the worst times of my life. Of course. But you know that's how it goes.
I think that's kind of what everyone says about touring is that, yeah, you know, there's all the fun sides, but then there's a lot of downsides as well.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun touring stories, but you know, unfortunately, I can't share them with you because I am a teacher now and I need to keep my job. And I would hate to have.
I was thinking that too. I'm like, I don't think you can share certain.
Yeah,
stories.
No. All I can say is I'm very grateful that cell phone technology was not available at the time, and you know, videotaping stuff on phones, because yeah, I certainly wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. There were a lot of people in a lot of positions, I'll tell you that much.
I was going to say, you'd probably be even more famous than you were, because how it seems to work now.
That Tommy Lee Pamela Anderson tape is nothing compared to what I've seen and done in my life, man.
I love it. You know, it's not that people are doing crazier things today. It's just that they're getting caught doing it.
Yeah, I think that's what it
is. No way. Everything you do and say is documented. And, you know, I've learned my lesson. And I'm just, you know, very happy that cell phone technology isn't what it is now back then.
Exactly.
That's all.
I got you.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
You've said some amazing things today. I think that, and you shared a lot. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
I wanted to ask you if there's anything in particular, if someone's listening right now that wants to get to the place that you've gotten and the place that you are at, you know, whether as a drummer or musician in general, or as a creative in general, actually, you know, what advice would you give them?
Be passionate and follow that little feeling inside your stomach, because it's always right. And perseverance, persistence, and passion. Those are the three keys to success right there. And just, you can't give up. It's, you know, being in a situation where you can help people after you've been successful, I think is also critical. Passing the torch, teaching people. That's why I became a teacher. I learned so much while, you know, recording and touring that I wanted to pass that on to other people. And, you know, I'm a lifelong learner, and you know, the minute that you think that you know how to play your instrument or that you know what you're doing is the minute that you really don't know anything at all.
Yeah.
And just always keep an open mind. Do nice things for people.
Do you have time for our 20 questions round?
I can do whatever you want.
All right.
All right.
Okay. You ready for this?
Ready.
Okay. Here we go. Ready, Russ?
Yep.
All right.
I hope so.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Meat or veggies?
Meat.
CD or vinyl?
Vinyl.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Canada or Scotland?
Canada. Never been to Scotland.
Pizza or potatoes?
Pizza.
Melody or rhythm?
Rhythm.
Friends or Frasier?
Friends.
Indie or major?
Indie.
Rain or shine?
Rain.
Breaking Bad or Homeland?
Breaking Bad.
Dogs or hot dogs?
Dog.
Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Marilyn Manson.
Cats or rats?
Cat.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Michael Jackson.
Damn it.
Twerk or work?
I like to work when I twerk. I don't know. Yeah. Work.
Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
I don't know who the first guy was, so I'll go with Ricky Martin. Okay.
Jesus or Satan?
Satan.
There you go. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
The Riddler.
Ross or Marcio?
Marcio.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ross.
One tick for me.
Yeah. Well, see, Ross, Marcio and I have been in a room naked together, I'm pretty sure.
It's got to be. I mean, yeah. Even if I don't remember it, I believe you.
And I was at your wedding, so.
This is true.
It's cool. Yeah. There's no hard feelings.
Okay. I love you too, though, Ross. Okay.
Thanks. Love you too.
All right, man. Is there any music recommendations that you'd have? Anything you're listening to right now that that you'd like people to check out? Besides, your music.
Yeah. As far as metal goes, I like a newer band called Battlecross.
Okay.
I think those guys are the real deal. As far as, I find myself listening to albums like Raining Blood by Slayer again, and just, you know, really listening to people playing their instruments well together.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Synergy.
Yeah, just that type of stuff. And again, just, you know, like classic rock, like something will come on the radio that this classic rock song, something ridiculous, but, you know, knowing what I know now and being able to hear music the way that I hear it now, mm-hmm. the appreciation I have for that. And again, you know, any Zeppelin song comes on and I'm just, you know, I have a massive heart on because John Bonham, it just slays me. It's like such an organically incredible drummer. And man, that guy is something else.
Well, you know, Dan, man, this has been wonderful. Really, it's such a pleasure chatting with you and catching up. I haven't talked to you, I think, in a couple of years. Make sure you check out Varga online. It's VargaHQ.com. Make sure you check out their latest records. Enter the Metal. And Return of the Metal. It's awesome. You should check it out.
Connect with Varga. I'm the guy in the band with the big mouth, in case you haven't figured that out. Because I love metal and I love the band and I love music.
Sounds great, man.
Yeah, man.
Hey, thanks so much, brother. Much love.
My pleasure, guys. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, so connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.